This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of October 26th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. It's still Sunday night, so that's always a plus. How you doing, man?
I'm feeling a little bit blue.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of weight on your shoulder.
That too. Yeah. Well, come on, Dodgers, get it together.
I see. Okay. Yeah, you just don't cut yourself. You might not clot.
Don't kill us all at once. all right. We got to mask up, guys. We've got the answers to the test. I've given you all the information I have. I don't even know what to say anymore, except that the numbers really aren't going down that much here in Japan either, but we got to stay vigilant and diligent and work at it.
Yep. Do it for your fellow man. Do it for your family. Do it for your loved ones.
Do it for your neighbor.
Indeed.
Love your neighbor. All right. On this week's show, we've got a great chat with Spencer Patton of the Bay Stars, and we're going to discuss DeNA and skipper Alex Ramirez stepping down. We'll take a brief look at both league races and talk about Hisashi Iwakuma's retirement. And if we have time, we'll get to some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So on Wednesday, we were able to sit down and have a telephone conversation with Spencer Patton of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars. And he's a fourth year right hander who's one of the reasons I think Michael Westbay is still has hair. Because when he joined the Bay Stars, he helped add some stability to a bullpen that used to just make barbershops go out of business, I think, with people either losing their hair or pulling it out. And I think Michael Westbay was on track for that, but thank goodness they got the bullpen in order.
They should have had, they could have had, stadium ads for Adelance or, Takasu Clinic, some of those hair replacement places.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know what you were talking about because I usually flip the radio station when those commercials come on. Okay. So but Spencer, it was interesting this past week that it looked like his agent.
It is.
he tweeted out some numbers about Spencer, especially that included the fact that Spencer, who's 32, he's at 200 innings pitched in NPB with 98 holds. And he has 239 strikeouts for a K rate of 10.76. I think that K rate number was before he had another outing this weekend. So he has done a lot of work in the time that he has been here. And he gives up his share of hits and some walks, but he gets his strikeouts and he's got a decent ERA. And luckily, like I said, we were able to talk to Spencer. Now, we have been trying to get an interview, at least I have been, with Alex Ramirez for, I would say, about 8 weeks, maybe eight plus. And I guess with the news that came out that he's stepping down, it makes sense why we were given the runaround, so to speak, that we were not able to get the interview, because I don't think they wanted us asking about his future and all that stuff. But Spencer was happy to talk about his future. And he was in a hotel room in Nagoya before the second game of the series against the Dragons. And he gave us a lot of information. So let's hear what Spencer has to say. All right. Joining us this week is Yokohama Bay Stars pitcher Spencer Patton. Thank you very much for sitting down with us this week.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we appreciate it, man. It's hard to get the interviews this year, so we appreciate it. Now, we spoke earlier in this corona-impacted season, and besides, being sheltered from the team or from the media by the team, what has this whole experience been like as a player?
It's unprecedented. It's just something that I don't think anybody was prepared for to handle, really. And there, there's just been some ups and downs and just some confusing times and just uncertainties about what was going to transpire during the season. So, it's been different. There's just no way to explain it, really. We started out with on time, and then we got delayed, and which was, you know, something that's never happened where you had to, you know, stop what you were doing and then, you know, take a rest and, you know, only practice every other day or whatever it was. And then we started up quickly again, and then without fans. And so you're playing empty stadiums, and, you know, that's awkward. But we moved forward, and, you know, we for the most part, the league and the fans and everybody have done a great job in taking the right precautions and staying safe and allowing the season to be completed.
Yeah. Now, what was that whole situation like? Because it evolved, right? You went from no fans to a limit of 5,000 fans to increased number of fans. So how was that whole evolution?
I mean, at first I was skeptical because, you know, I mean, obviously I was getting a lot of my information and news about the coronavirus from the U.S. and what a mess it's been over there, you know, and the numbers and all that stuff. And I guess I wasn't really comparing that to what the numbers were showing in Japan and how, you know, they were plateauing and even declining at certain points. So I was skeptical at first, but, you know, it seems as if it's going smoothly. And, you know, as far as I'm aware of, there hasn't been any reports of people contracting the virus that have been at these games. So, you know, they did a good job with, you know, limiting it at first, you know, half capacity and kind of making them silent games, you know, clapping only or whatever, and then evolving it into more cheering and getting more fans in. And I think, you know, even coming up soon, teams are going to start experimenting with, you know, 80% capacity and see how it goes.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, it's just they're trying to get life back to normal here. You know, baseball is a big part of this culture, and I think people here and all over the world are just, you know, anxious to get back to some type of normalcy.
Right, and we had this frequently used term in the, well, particularly in the United States, but generating your own juice kind of a thing when there were no fans. How was that for you? Because as a reliever, you're coming in and mostly leveraged situations, and you have to be pumped up, and there was nobody there at first. How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little difficult at first, trying to figure out how I was going to navigate that, you know, how I was going to find that competitive edge without, you know, any adrenaline or motivation from the fans. But I think you just got to realize that, you know, you're still competing for your job, you know, and that's what you do for a living. And you've done it for so long that, you know, regardless of the fans being there, you still know what to do. You still know how to get it done, you know. So I think it was just at that point kind of muscle memory, in the sense that my, you know, my body and my mentality just kind of took over in those situations and knew what it had to do despite there being fans. Now, don't get me wrong, there's no substitute for playing in front of 20 to 40,000 people.
Right.
So, but I think at that point you just kind of had to trust that you know, your body and your mentality had done it for so long that you just knew that you had to find a way, and you trusted that you were going to get it done regardless.
Yeah, my thing was basketball when I played, and I had somebody ask me one time, what are you thinking when you have to shoot those free throws late in the game? And I said, I'm thinking I want to win, and we got a chance to win. I'm not thinking about, you know, pressure and all that other stuff. So
I'm thinking about making the free throw.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking I want to win. You know, whatever it takes, you know, make the free throw, miss the free throw. I just, you know, pressure is not the thing that I'm worried about. And so I hear what you're saying is that, you know, the job remains the same, you know. all right, so this season is winding down. You got fewer than 20 games, and looks like your side is not going to the postseason, but it's not decided. But how do you evaluate this season that the Bay Stars had?
Man, it's just been a weird year, you know. Just from the get-go, you know, just like we just previously discussed. But I think the pieces are here. I really do. We've been riddled with some injuries this year. That's been unfortunate. You look at some of these guys on this team, you know, like Sano, who goes from a bench player to the team captain this year. And at some one point he was hitting 350 or higher, you know, and, you know, he's got over 15 homers and, you know, just that's a great accomplishment considering, you know, he had 5 homers last year.
Yeah, don't sell him short. I think he's got 20.
Because he got 20?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, he's up there in the home runs and with the rest of the home run guys in the league. But coming off of a season last year where he was primarily pinch hitter and only had 5 homers, and that's a great way to, you know, advance his career. But, I mean, you know, he's hit 300. We got Kajitani, who in our leadoff spot was hitting over 300. Miyazaki continually to hit over 300 every year. And then, you know, Tyler Austin, who was a great asset to this team. And so on paper, man, it's hard to see how we're not winning games, but I think it just comes down to we had some key guys go down in key points of the season, and we just couldn't make it all click together when we needed to, right? You know, one aspect of the team was doing well while another one was struggling, and then
sure,
when the struggling side picked it up, it seemed like we dropped in another area. So I think the pieces are here. It's just we gotta figure out how to put it all together with this team and this organization, because I think this team has some good years to come.
All right. Well, pardon me for saying so, but I thought maybe the rotation was a kind of an issue in that you had some injuries there as well, and those guys didn't all maybe meet some of the expectations. I'm not sure what your expectations were within the team. And then the bullpen, I thought you guys had issues there with Yasuaki Yamasaki not having his best year, especially what I like to call the big boy innings, you know, the innings 7, 8, 9 where you and some other guys are pitching. It seemed like there was a lot of shuffling going around. So how do you see the pitching staff?
Yeah, there was some, you know, our starters, you know, it's unfortunate with, you know, Imanaga going down.
Right.
You know, the situation with the foreign guys this year and Peoples having to, Michael Peoples having to be the guy that's, you know, back and forth and stuff. So mm-hmm. I'd really like to see him settle in. I think he could be a great asset to this team. And then, you know, Tyra going down and Kamishitani going down, and, you know, we still got Azuma, who's coming back from Tommy John down in the minor league. So
right,
we just, the starting pitching, like I said, we have the pieces. It's just this year wasn't a good year for injuries and guys filling expectations. But what I will say is I am super pumped for Onuki, who has had a tremendous year as one of our, I mean, to me, he's been our best starter consistently throughout the season. And so that guy's been, I mean, I think his first start was pretty rough. And then he came back that next start and showed what he can do. And it's kind of been putting together a pretty good year for him. So I'm super pumped for that guy. But when it comes to the bullpen, yeah, there was a lot of shuffling going around. You know, obviously everyone can see that Yamasaki didn't have a good year. Didn't have the best year that he's had. And isn't, you know, having a year that he's obviously capable of. But I will say that I think Kazuki Mishima stepped into that role and did a fantastic job.
Has done for sure, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's what you need out of a bullpen, someone who can step into a role when someone's struggling and fulfill the role and do an outstanding job and take the place that they have to, you know, to allow that the guy that's struggling to find it again. So hopefully Yamasaki can come back from this next year and you know, get back on track and perform like we know that he can. But yeah, it's the pitching staff has been frustrating this year, I think, especially since, like I said earlier, our offense has been on paper pretty good. You know, got several guys hitting over 300, and we got what do we got, like 3 guys hit over 20 homers right now.
Yep.
You know, so I mean, we're producing offensively, so unfortunately we just haven't been able to match that from the pitching side for a number of reasons.
Yeah. Now, you personally put together four really consistent seasons in NPB, especially in that particular stadium. So your agent tweeted out some interesting facts about your career here, and I'm just wondering what your future looking like.
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like I have pitched well enough to continue to play. My body feels great. My arm feels great. You know, so I feel like I have some good years still left in me to play. But you know, ultimately, I'm just gonna rely on God to open and close those doors for me in the future as far as how long I want to play for. But when it comes to Japan, you know, I like it here. I've made some good friends here. My kids have made some good friends here, and learned the language a little bit and got acclimated to the culture a little bit and know my way around mm-hmm. for the most part. So I would definitely welcome any opportunity to stay here and play here. But we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah. I imagine that you have those typical import contracts, so you'd be seeking another contract next year. Are you working on that at the moment?
As of right now, there has been no negotiations being made, but we're still in the middle of the season. We're not mathematically eliminated, and nobody's clinched the division yet. So I think that's what we're all focused on: just finishing the season strong and see where everybody finishes up. And then, like I said, we'll see what happens after all that takes place.
Okay. Basically, last question. Now, your skipper has taken a lot of shrapnel this season from media, from fans, and from this and that. When you're no longer playing, let's say 10 years or so from now, how much have you considered coaching or managing?
When it comes to coaching or managing, it would have to be just a opportune situation, right? Like, I mean, I don't know if I could start from the bottom and go to the top when it comes to coaching.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It seemed like a long journey as a player. I can only imagine, you know, doing it as a coach.
Mm.
Like I said, I'm not gonna close the door on any opportunity when it comes to staying in the game. It's a possibility. I like to coach. I mean, I think I have a knack for it. I kind of sometimes take it upon myself, even as a player now here with some of these guys, to, you know, pull them off to the side and talk to them about the game or pitch selection or mechanics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think I have a feel for that kind of thing. And, I'm obviously a personable guy. I can communicate what I'm trying to say, and I think there's room for that. But like I said, it's gotta be a possibility that's bright for me and my family. You know, I'm not just gonna jump right into coaching just for the sake of coaching.
Sure, got it. Okay. All right, well, we really appreciate you taking the time. We always love talking to you and having you on the show. And actually, we're kind of bookending interviews with you because we talked to you earlier on when the pandemic was first hitting and the season was starting, and now the season's winding down and we get to talk to you again. So always a pleasure, and look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely, yeah. I hope there's a possibility and opportunities for us to talk more about Japanese baseball in the future.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, Spencer, thanks a lot. So I think you get a sense of how much this coronavirus year has been a burden on players and stuff, Jim, but what stood out to you about what he said?
I think just a couple of things. I like his, you know, I've always liked his attitude. He's always straightforward, friendly, and he's straightforward in the sense that he's not really concerned whether he agrees with you or not. And is keen to give his opinion, but to be very civil and, you know, even radically disagrees. Oh, no, I absolutely don't agree. But it's always in an open sort of discussion. I think it's the beard he has, and he has these really big eyes that, you know, it's like if if he were armed, I'd be afraid maybe. But it's always friendly, and he's such a warm, welcoming guy that it's always a fun chat. I think the interesting thing for me was talking about the bullpen and talking about Yasuaki Yamasaki's troubles, you know, and finding a way for him to, you know, hoping he can snap out of it. And this was really a huge mm-hmm. thing for the Bay Stars this year, because I didn't get into the details much, but he was. The attitude seemed to be that he will snap out of it. It's a mental thing. But if it was a mental thing, but it was, in my opinion, it was an execution thing. He wasn't executing his pitches. I mean, his pitches did not look as good as they used to. And so it requires, you know, it's going to require some work. It's, I don't think, a short-term project, but I think his attitude was absolutely right. This is just from my watching his balls that should be dropping that were hanging, and, you know, fastballs mm-hmm. that weren't spinning. And I'm thinking, okay, this is not working. It's not like he's lacking location. Well, that happened as well. It's not like he was missing his spots or he was occasionally bad. It was pretty much all his pitches seemed to be bad. And it didn't seem like, you know, it seemed like a deeper issue. So I liked what he said. You know, we have to get through this together, and it's a group effort, and they do have a good group. I liked how Kazuki Mishima, you know, stepped in and did the job, and that was really big. So that was one thing that I really liked, and his conviction that he's done well. Now, he reminds me a lot of his situation is sort of reminiscent of Jay Jackson's. And I don't mean in terms of things off the field or family and such, but his situation with his relative to his team is similar to mm-hmm. Jay Jackson's, in that mm-hmm. He was successful to a point. He wasn't sort of like the guy who every other team wanted to have on their roster. But he was mm-hmm. a good contributing player. And he was a good teammate. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, Jay's case, there were issues with communicating with his pitching coach sort of exacerbated things, and I don't think that's the case in Yokohama, but they're at that level of player, so it's sort of like he could easily have more opportunities in Japan, whether with the Bay Stars or with another team, but he also might not. You just never know.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, he might have some opportunities. I could see a number of teams that might be interested. But after talking to him and after listening to the chat one more time, after I put it together and sent it to mm-hmm. you, I just kind of got this constant, you know, this tone of this constant anxiousness that we've seen throughout the season. Now it's not burdening the players. I think I said burden at the beginning, but. I think it casts over the entire season, over the entire organization of MPB and its teams because of the coronavirus. And I think it has been obvious, and like Spencer said, they're trying to get more fans in there and make it closer to normal, but it's just not normal. And this has been a long season. It was long when they took a break, but like Spencer indicated, unprecedented that they had to stand around essentially and wait for a go sign after getting ready, you know, mm-hmm. and sort of like lighting a fuse and then telling the fuse to stop and wait, you know. Well, it's the fuse is going to burn.
Hey, just, you there, stop burning.
Yeah, it's going to burn and it's going to keep going.
Stay warm, but don't burn.
You just only have, you only have so much, but that's why I actually think some of the teams that have been able to make it through with all these injuries and shuffle in a bunch of different players are the ones that we see at the tops of the leagues at the moment, because it just really has been a challenge for everybody. It has been so long. anyway, I did catch one backdoor slider from Spencer, and that was the reply to the question about the future. And he threw out, it seemed like he was throwing out of the stretch at that point. And what I mean by stretch is because he goes in to say that he has established some roots here and he likes the culture and he wants to return. And obviously he's kind of planting that seed if it's not with Yokohama, where he obviously it seemed like he wants to stay. It's very much that he wants to stay in NPB. And I think we talked about it earlier in the season that we had so many bullpen blowups early on through the season. I think I can see a number of teams in Japan that could use a guy like Spencer to just come in and help steady things in the seventh, sixth, seventh, eighth inning when there are troubles out there on the field. And like you said, he's a team guy, and I think he would step into whatever bullpen role is needed. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what's going to happen next year. None of us really know what's going to happen next year. However, seeing someone who has been here and wants to stay here, as opposed to a guy who maybe you have to bring in and they have to go through all the adjustments of being in Japan and all that stuff. You might be better off with a veteran guy, an MPB veteran who has been here a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see him easily fitting in with Cebu Lions or the Hanshin Tigers or the Nippon Ham Fighters or the Marines or the Swallows. These are all teams where he would be really, really welcome. I know there's a couple of teams that have really, you know, long waiting lists to get in, but these are teams that would welcome another arm like, you know, somebody experienced who knows what's going on and who, you know, who's predictable.
Right, right. So we will keep an eye on the news from that front. And as we transition and talk about the Bay Stars now, I was all ready to talk about the Bay Stars being in fourth place. And I am sure that I predicted that they would finish in fourth place when we did the prediction special earlier in March. So if they can hang on to that fourth place spot, I'll be right. So good for me, but bad for them. Bad for them.
That's what we care about.
Well, that's what I care about. But look, someone, I say it every year, someone asks me, you know, what teams do you root for? I said, I root for me, because when I do my predictions, I really put a lot of thought into them. So whether I'm rooting against my own team or rooting for someone else's, I'm rooting for me.
Well, I put a lot. Actually, I did put some thought into my predictions this year. And
I like that. Actually, this year,
I used to go overboard on my predictions, and I used to be really actually not half bad at it. But I just got tired of the whole exercise, and then. But I felt I was shamed the last couple of years, so I put some effort into it. But to be honest, the next day I had other things to worry about. So if you asked me who I picked to finish second, third, fourth, or fifth, I couldn't tell you.
All right. Well, I can tell you that I had the Giants, the Dragons, the Tigers, and the Bay Stars, and if everything stays the way it is right now, I think I'll be right. That'll be 2 years in a row that I got the top four teams.
Pretty good.
In the Central League, if it stays that way. I don't know that it will, but hey.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get back on track here. So so I was all ready to talk about the Bay Stars and how, you know, the season was kind of, I thought actually, considering Yoshitomo Tsugo's trip jump to the major leagues and gone to the United States and having Keita Sano take over as the cleanup hitter and all the injuries they went through, having Shota Imanaga and other pitchers injured, and then seeing a guy like Shinichi Onuki come out of nowhere and lead the team in victories, and he's still under the radar. I think nobody really knows that he's among the league leaders in victories. And you've got, as Spencer said, Mishima coming out of nowhere to be the closer and being a quiet closer. There's no excitement. I mean, he just gets, you know, three outs and three or four batters and the game's over.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah. There's no drama stuff. Yeah.
I mean, he's going to get kicked out of the Japanese Closers Union. Right. dude, you're making us look bad. Stop it.
Right. But then we had the news on Saturday, and we had talked about it 2 weeks ago with Claudio Rodriguez when he was on the show, the fact that there was a report that Alex Ramirez was going to step down at the end of the season after 5 years, and that Daisuke Miura was going to take over. And we got word on Saturday that part one of that is taking place, that Alex is going to step down. And at the end of the news article that I read, Daisuke Miura was reportedly lined up to move up from the farm team to take over.
Yeah, we still haven't had an official word that Miura is going to take over, but we did have news yesterday that the Bay Stars are going to have a new minor league manager next year.
Oh, boy.
So that's Toshihisa Nishi.
Okay, yeah, former Giants.
Yeah, former Giants, yeah. Finished his career with the Bay Stars, yeah. So he's a good guy, and guy I like to chat with, so that'll be fun. And so, yeah, so Miura's going to be back in Yokohama in some
hair
capacity.
Yeah, probably. So so I wasn't sure how to feel about this whole thing, because I love the person Alex Ramirez. I like what he does as a manager. You know, I know that you tweeted about the fact that they probably didn't have the players, they didn't have the roster to win a championship, and that he declared or proclaimed that they were going to win.
Let me ask you, when you read all these art, and most of these articles included a phrase, the Bay Stars, essentially, the Bay Stars should have won the pennant, kind of thing. I mean, it's basically the pennant was theirs for them to win. You know, that was almost a constant component of all these Ramirez should step down stories. When you read, the Bay Stars had the talent to win the pennant, what's your gut reaction?
My gut reaction was, on one side of the ball, they had a lot of talent, a lot of offensive punch. But on the defensive side, on the run prevention side, they had issues. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I could agree with that. But
yeah, I couldn't either.
Could say that if everything, you know, we saw it come, everything came together for the Yakult Swallows in, what was it, 2015?
Right, but one of the things that came together was having a guy who had a historic season.
Well, they didn't need to have one guy have a historic offensive season. They needed
somebody on the team to have a historic season. And also, when the season started, we didn't know that Tyler Austin was going to be such a good fit for Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a remarkable acquisition, and I want to think that Louis Lopez, who scouts the hitters, although I think they do it more geographically than anything, Louis Lopez and Greg Hansel, former Tigers pitcher, is the other Bay Star scout. That they just do a great job. The guys they picked up have just been really good.
Yeah, but again, you know, everything has to come together. You've got to play defense. You've got to pitch. True. You've got to stay healthy. And haven't had an opportunity to have all three of those things go right for them. They've had offensive punch and power to score some runs.
They had two things go far better than we expected this year, and that was Tyler Austin. And that was Takayuki Kajitani playing like he found the Wayback Machine and went back to 2015.
Well, now, wait a minute now. He's just been a guy who has suffered with injuries. And when he's healthy, he's productive. When he's not.
Yes, but he's been rarely healthy.
Yeah, but he's either not productive or he's not on the roster. And this year, he was on the roster and he was healthy. So he's going to put up numbers.
Yeah, but he has been healthy, which is something that he hasn't really been in 3 years. So... that he was unpredictable. I mean, he was dynamite when he was younger. He's lost, you know, he's a dynamite player this year, but it's not something you expected. It's just, you're not, and Tyler Austin, we didn't expect, I guess we didn't expect, Jose Lopez to have such a poor start to the season, but he it's not out of his range. He's certainly having overall the kind of season we sort of expected, a little on the low side, but nothing to be screaming about. I just look at that offense and I think, okay, when I look at the Bay Stars offense, and Kate Tassano, of course, is a surprise, not, you know, because we didn't know. Alex Ramirez knew, I believe. Which leads us to another question, which I have.
Wait a minute. Wait. I don't think he knew. I think he knew something. I think he was confident.
And well, I say
you're the one who said that you need, you know, X number of.
Well, I did know you don't need X number of. We're talking about people looking at performance to understand performance norms.
But that's not knowing. That's just.
No, but you also can look at skills.
All right. Well, what I always say. Here we are switching roles.
No, but I'm saying that for me.
I'm saying you're saying eye test, and I'm saying numbers, and
yes. I mean, in general, yes. I mean, from my standpoint, I couldn't tell you. Okay. So I couldn't look at Kate Tassano and say, oh, he's the guy. And I know that Alex Ramirez, one of the things, and Michael Westbay confirmed this, one of the things he said about Kate Tassano is, oh, he hit, 357 with runners in scoring position. Sounds like me. Kind of very typical Alex Ramirez. Sounds like a guy who knows what he's doing because he hits like me.
Yeah.
But I think it's – with Alex Ramirez, there's this whole shroud of mystery to me because I really think – there are things he knows that he's going to tell you, and there are things he knows, but he doesn't think you can understand. So he's going to dumb it down for you.
Okay.
And I'm very conflicted, and I'm going to write about this first chance I have. I'm working on it now. I'm very conflicted about whether half the time he's telling you something, it's because he believes it or he's dumbing it down. And the reason I say that is because one of the components of the stories we heard this week was the Bay Stars should have won they should have been a pennant contender. They should have won the pennant. And Alex Ramirez kept them from doing it. Okay, so that was one component of the we have to fire Ramirez story. And another one was Alex Ramirez lost the confidence of the players. Because he confused them and didn't communicate, and he did data-based analysis, such as choosing his lineups based on how well hitters performed in certain ballparks. Now, I will tell you this. If Alex Ramirez was actually basing his data on how a hitter performed in a specific ballpark, like he did one time when he then he probably, I don't say he deserved to be fired, but he deserved to be, talked to or educated, because that's the really the sort of like, you need to know more than that, because it's just that data isn't really helping you. And I'll end this because, and what I meant about him dumbing things down is one time a reporter asked him, one of the times is at Yokohama Stadium and doing the pregame scrum, and somebody said, well, why didn't Daisuke Nakai start against this pitcher? And he said, because Daisuke Nakai is 1-for-12 against Giants left-handers.
Okay.
And if that's really the reason, then basically they got to find a woodshed for this guy. Because that's really, 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 okay, I'm going to say it's dumb. I hate to use the word dumb, but it's really uneducated. It's really anti-intellectual on the highest level. But what I suspected when I heard that was I'm going to give the reporters an answer that they can consume and do something with. You know, I'm going to give them a reason that they can understand as opposed to my real reason.
Yeah, and that happens a lot.
And that's what I mean about Alex Ramirez being shrouded in mystery. He says things that are completely unbelievable sometimes, but you see the reporters nodding their heads in agreement like, oh, I get it. And I think this is his game. And, you know, he's playing the Japanese game. I'm doing this, but At the same time, I do believe if the talk is that there were players who were confused and didn't understand their roles, that part I kind of believe. I don't. It could be the team using it as an excuse. I don't know. But he's very good generally talking with players. He's very positive. But, you know, people are all unique and not every individual is, you know, not everybody wants to be treated in the way that some managers are able to treat them.
Okay. Well, I didn't get actually a lot of time to see the presser that he did, but I did see some highlights from it. And one thing that I noticed was, A, he kind of looked relieved, and he spoke as if he were relieved that he said, saying things like, I want to be a fan, I want to root for the Bay Stars. And that seems to be code for, to me, it seems to be code for, I'm gonna be on the fan side and yell at the manager too now, like you guys yell at me, and I'm gonna leave all this stress behind.
The other one, so I guess sort of reading between the lines. So we had the attack on his controversial managing, such as using data based on players' performance in parks to select his lineups, his inability to explain those things to his players so that they made sense. Which I may or may not be true. I don't know. And you never know, again, whether this is an excuse for the team just to be, you know, the front office to prove that to the owner that they mean business. You know, the Bay Stars are a weird team. DNA has done a lot of good things business-wise. DNA has invested in the team. DNA has supported. I mean, this is a team that has changed managers more than any other team in Japan.
Mm.
Since DNA took over in, 2012, they have had two managers. They've had two managers in 9 years. And that's probably a first for this organization. So on some things, they've done really well. But another component of DNA is the high pressure, the pressure cooker from owner Tomoko Namba. And some people can handle it. Some people can't. You don't know whether it's the team responding to the pressure to fire Ramirez. Whether it's Ramirez's desire to get out. Now, the last thing I have to say,
of all of the above, probably, but yeah, last thing.
The other interesting thing in the stories that were coming out, in addition to Alex Ramirez can't do, you know, Alex Ramirez doesn't know how to tie his shoes, you know, all those kind of stupid, ridiculous arguments that come out when managers are fired, sort of when foreign managers are fired. You don't see this when Japanese managers are fired usually. Interestingly enough, but the other one was the team has reserved a place for his role in the front office because they do have a lot of respect for his ability to spot talent and to work with players. So they have essentially, I think they have a player development or player personnel job they want him to do. I'm not certain if that's the job he wants.
Yeah, he's very competitive, as he did say in his presser. But we got to move on. So, three times the team has finished in the top three in the Central League, made a Japan Series appearance in 2017, stretching the Hawks to six games before succumbing there.
Yeah, how many teams have done that?
yeah. So, but you know, at some point, we'll look to try to have him on the show again. I don't know if he has another role in the organization. We still have to go through the same steps and jump through the hoops and all the windows and everything, but we've got to move on tonight. So thank you very much to Spencer. We appreciate your time, buddy.
Thank you, Spencer.
Making a four-seam transition. Let's talk about the CL race now. And that involves the Giants slowing down their roll toward the title. And the Dragons, as we mentioned last week, have hit their stride, especially at the plate. But I guess more than anything, Yudai Ono, their ace, whom I think I've badmouthed early on in the season, and ever since then, dude has really been Sawamura award winning worthy.
Keep talking smack about him.
I know. I said, man,
what, motivated, man.
How does he get to get opening day? And what are we doing here? And then all of a sudden he goes on a run. And now he has thrown 45 consecutive scoreless innings with the shutout of the Bay Stars on Thursday, a 1-0. That's the hardest one to get, I think. A 1-0 win when the run comes in the first inning. So then you have 8.5 innings of, well, I guess not in that case, you have 8 innings of, or 7.5, because they didn't bat in the bottom of the ninth. So of just stress everywhere for everybody watching, for everybody playing. So you know, I had time yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, John? Yes. So I went through.
Well, that was a question I was about to ask you.
I heard it.
We're in tune.
So I went through and I said, how many pitches has he thrown? How many hits has he allowed? What has he done in these 45 scoreless innings?
Hmm.
And so
you did have time.
42 strikeouts, 3 walks. That's unreal. Three walks.
He's been like that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the game that really, oddly enough, the game that convinced me was, I'm not going to say convinced me, because you see lots of pitchers have good games. Well, first of all,
do I get to finish my stats? I only got through 42 strikeouts and 3 walks.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had more. I see. We have a little pause. We have a pause length thing. I heard that pause and it sounded like the door, one of Spencer Patton's doors just opened for me.
Okay. All right. So yeah, let me finish my stats and then you can get to all that stuff. So 42 strikeouts, 3 walks. He has allowed 21 hits, 2 doubles. And both of them came in a game against Hanshin on October 23rd. He has thrown a total of 578 pitches over this streak. So that's an average of 115 pitches per game. And the last runs he allowed in a game before the streak started came on a 3-run home run by Seiya Suzuki in the first inning on September 15th. And he Ohno ended up leaving the game after allowing 4 runs in 4 innings, but they all came in the first inning.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my stats. Now, go ahead.
Well,
amazing, you're supposed to say.
Well, okay. I saw him pitch before he started his complete game streak. And I think it was his third loss of the season at Koshien. And I thought, wow, he pitched really well. My first thought was, this guy is pitching really well, and I was intrigued by what he was doing, and I really haven't watched him a lot in my career. But when you look at his stats and you look at his numbers and you see how consistent he is and you see how effective his two-seamer, two-seam sinker is, and how he's learned to work off the two-seam sinker with the occasional change and curve, but pretty much four seamer and two seam sinker, and you know that with some really good location. So his location's a little better, but the two seamer is really working, and it's almost like he belongs in a superhero movie. You know, we'll read that Yudai Ohno spent the off season after the 2019 season in the Himalayas, learning from, Tibetan monks or something. And he came back and he found a superpower, because that's how it looks. He's out there on the mound and he's completely nonplussed and completely he's repressible. You know, he's not irrepressible. He's subdued. And that's why I was so excited to see him in his game on Wednesday, when he pitched out of his only jam of the entire game in the eighth inning.
Yeah, on Thursday.
And it was like his 111th pitch, and he got a big out, and he slapped his glove, and he pumped his fist, and, you know, it's almost like he said, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was – and the other thing is that when he started the streak, I will never forget his answer. The reporter said – the post-game hero interviewer – question guy said, What are you doing differently now to win after his first win that you weren't doing before?
Right, because it took him like, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 starts even to get a win because he just wasn't pitching well. He wasn't pitching well enough to win games.
Well, he didn't. Yeah, I'm going to guess that when I think he gave up 7 or 8 runs in his first 2 starts that he wasn't pitching very well.
Yeah.
But he said nothing. He said almost like, almost like take that, Sawamura committee. I was pitching well enough to win, he said.
But I wasn't.
And then he added, and then he thought about it, or, you know, I guess he wanted an answer. And I think this was really the answer. He said, I realized that I wasn't able to stay in games long enough for the run support to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just decided I got to be more efficient. It's like, it's so weird. You know what's weird about that is, it sounds really honest in a format which really doesn't breed honesty. You know, mm-hmm. The interview, you're supposed to say something funny or goofy or something pat.
Sure.
But it was an answer that was counterintuitive. And then it was exactly like he followed that script for the next 3 months.
Yeah, and he has been good, and the bullpen has been good. And like I said last week, the batters or the lineup has started to get those hits that it wasn't able to hit or get earlier in the season, and just come through at times with the, like, for instance, tonight with the bases loaded, the catcher Takuya Kinoshita comes up with a bases clearing double, and that basically got him the lead. They added a couple runs later and won, you know, kind of comfortably. But yeah, it's weird. It's good to see the team doing what I thought it would do early on, and all the losses that, you know, it seemed like every day they were just losing for no reason. You know, they were in games, were right there, had opportunities to win and couldn't win. And now they've turned it around in the second half, particularly in the second half here, but in September and October, where they're winning games where it looks like, wow, they could easily lose this game, but they're winning. So they flipped that switch. And I think the bullpen. The bullpen has secured 37 consecutive games. Well, I shouldn't say the bullpen only, but the pitching staff as a whole. Once the team has been leading after the sixth inning, it has won 37 consecutive games.
Although they did give away a lead once during that stretch, at least.
Yeah, one with a miracle 2-out, 3-run home run by Shuhei Takahashi, and that was about 10 days ago. But for the most part, it has been the pitchers, and we haven't really been talking about those three, even though Rydell Martinez, the closer, had was taken off the roster recently for the ever ambiguous poor condition.
I know there. The lack of lower body fitness. That stung. Adam Jones had a fever during the week, and today he was deactivated with lack of lower body fitness. Is it me, or is this just the new code word this year? It's like, and the Dragons have got to be the worst. The Dragons are absolutely the worst team in NPB. Every player who's, you know, it's like, this is the new COVID-19 reality. The reporters don't get to ask these questions, you know.
Right.
Normally you go ask the trainer, and the trainer says, well, I don't know, I ask the coach. And you ask the coach, and somebody's going to spill the beans. And now it's like, the team says, you know, no, we're not telling it. We're just
poor condition. Next question.
Exactly. So, next question.
So anyway, Martinez had been at the back of the bullpen, but he, like I said, is off the roster. They managed through that in a game earlier this week. They got through it tonight. Daisuke Sobue has been, and all these guys, you know, even Ono, he's 32. Sobue is not young. The only guy who's sort of young is Hiroto Fuku, the left-hander, and he has even righted his ship in that he's able to pitch back-to-back-to-back days and still be effective. So those guys need a, like a, I should say needed. I don't know. We don't know if Martinez is going to be back this, you know, with the season, you know, 10 plus games to go. But, the, you know, we had the JFK guys in Hanshi for a while.
Okay.
We need some kind of nickname for these guys. They deserve it. They're not flashy, but they certainly deserve it. I was thinking HDR, but that's not sexy like JFK. HDR, you know, you whatever.
I don't even know what HDR means.
Well, it's, what is it, hard disk recorder? I'm not sure what it means, but...
Okay, we'll have to work on that one a little bit. I have a question for you, or at least I have a comment, is that one of the things that Ono said, interestingly enough, he's really gone off of the self-deprecating comments that were the staple of his first, you know, his first three hero interviews after his first three complete games.
Mm-hmm.
And he said... After the last one, he said, "What do you attribute this to?" He said, I have to give credit to the team staff and to the manager for the way they've helped me, you know, manage this load." And I have to wonder if, you know, the way Japanese teams are organized, every Japanese team is organized a little differently. And I know I've said this before, but some teams rely on the manager to set the tone for the training and conditioning. And that when it could well be that the second year of Tsuyoshi Yoda is showing fruits in that area.
Perhaps. I mean, it wasn't early in the season. They looked awful, but I think it's the whole combination. I don't think it's any one.
No, but I'm just saying. There are things. It could be. I know. I gave probably too much credit to the Yakult Swallows and the SoftBank Hawks in 2015 because, you know, when you make big changes, one of the problems with making big changes is you sometimes see you get whiplash. and I mean sort of statistical whiplash. Everything sort of gets into a groove and guys are in good shape, but. People, you know, as we know, everybody's a little different and everybody's habits are a little different. Some people can't sustain the habits. They can't sustain the workload of the conditioning. And we saw in 2000 in the Swallows and the Hawks who did extremely different conditioning programs in 2015 that in 2016 they both had a lots and lots of little injuries. They were very fit in 2015. In 2016, it was like everybody was hurt.
Yeah.
And I think, these things require lots of work. No, the knowledge level is not there. I mean, I think they're making progress, but the point about this is that it could well be the Dragons are probably a traditional team in that when Yoda came in, he made some changes or he brought in people who made some changes and they're going through that cycle now of ups and downs and maybe more ups than downs.
Okay. Well, it's a good cycle right now. Let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the Pacific League. And the Hawks are getting in the bus and driving over people and backing over them to make sure.
Well, they're going to do that against the Lotte Marines this week. So, yeah.
Well, they won 12 consecutive games. So the streak
starting with two against the Marines.
Yeah, the streak got stopped on Saturday, but they started a new one on Sunday. So, their magic number. I wanted to mention that the Giants' magic number is four, and that's because the Dragons are in second place, and they won as well. The SoftBank Hawks' magic number is down to two. Mm-hmm. So this is officially clinch week, in my opinion. We're going to see both teams wrap it up here. But I did want to mention the fact that the Sabre Lions, have been putting a little bit of pressure or applying a little bit of pressure to the Lotte Marines. And it looks from a distance like they have a chance because they're still only three games behind Lotte with, I don't know, Lotte has 12 games to play. The Lions have 13. Yeah. But
and the Lions played the Marines well, so yeah.
But yeah, in reality, they have to go on a, I wouldn't say an epic collapse, but the Marines have definitely had the advantage. They'd have to have an unfortunate slip up. Wow. While the Marines have to have a serious run to get up there. So
the Marines are a more entertaining team than they have been in the past, but I certainly see them still as maybe it's my, you know, it's just my ingrained opinion of them is that they're still a team with a bunch of average guys.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what the average guys are doing as long as a team they're producing and winning.
Yeah,
and
that's true, but I see them as fragile, although obviously the Lions have shown that sort of like glass jaw a little bit more this year.
Yeah, well, they might be fragile, but against SoftBank, they've been very sturdy. So
now, before we move on, wanted to ask your opinion about something. I was digging around in, you know, I was in the Devil's Workshop today. And I was sort of looking at, you know, things that made the, you know, for a sidebar about the Hawks pennant. And I was looking at things that sort of made them stand out. And the Hawks are very much in a way like Yuki Inagita. They're not really the best at most things, but they're like near the best at everything. You know, Yuki Inagita is not having his typical Yuki Inagita season. Okay, he's leading Japan in runs scored, and he's leading Japan in slugging average. And then he's just one of the really good guys at everything else. So that's sort of the way the Hawks are. But I noticed one really interesting number that I hadn't heard all year is that the Hawks have today, they played their 110th game, which is close to like being a regular normal kind of season.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do you think they've grounded into double plays? I mean, normally we're talking, you know, we look at numbers for a season and we see 80 or we see, you know, 75 or 120. The Hawks have grounded in 110 games, the Hawks have grounded into 45 double plays.
I was going to say around 50.
That's bizarre. They're very easily going to set a Japan record. And, you know, an 120-game season's not far from the old 130 games. I think the record right now is 55 in a 90-game season.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but... They are sacrificing probably
they're 75 sacrifices
as the other team, so they don't run into those typical situations and then
as often. You know, speaking of that, the most recent team to have a really really low total for runners for grounding into double plays was the 1990 Lotte Orions. They sacrificed like 100. They sacrificed the most in Japan. I think they sacrificed over 150 times that year.
They sacrificed so they didn't hit into the double play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the 90s. That was when Norifumi Nishimura was playing for the Marines. He was like he was their sacrifice puncher.
Oh, okay.
What a surprise.
Well, thing I was going to say was that the guys with the Hawks who are maybe slow of foot haven't really played a lot of games this year for
true,
them.
And strike out a fair amount.
Right. So that's probably another reason that's helping to contribute to such a low
number.
But it's
just bizarre. I mean, it's such a weird number. You don't really think about it, but it's a huge thing because the Hawks play really good defense. They are pretty good at turning the double. I think the Giants, the Yomiuri Giants do too, but those two teams are easily the best defensive teams in Japan. The other thing the Hawks do really, really well is they strike out a lot of batters. I mean, they're good at that. So
that helps. That helps. Mm. All right, let's make a one-seam transition and talk about Hisashi Iwakuma and the fact that he announced his retirement the day we came out with last week's podcast.
Yeah, that was very thoughtless. I mean, thoughtful of him.
Well, you know, I guess he's just working on his own little schedule there.
I know. What, you know, it's like
a nerve.
Yeah, it probably was saying, good, that those losers podcast is going out today. So
so he's 39. He's 39. He amassed 170 wins over his career combined in Japan and the major leagues. And He has had shoulder surgery in 2017, and during his 6 years in Seattle, he just, you know, really didn't come back to Japan with when he came back in 2019. He just didn't come back with a good resume health wise, and he pitched well over there in the States. But by the time he was back here, we just didn't know what he was going to be. And it turns out he was a guy I like to call, he was already in retirement. He had a realignment. Instead of announcing his retirement, he was announcing his realignment because he realized he wasn't able to pitch. And
I think he pitched in two minor league games in 2019.
Yeah, but he has just really been hurt. So it's unfortunate. I wanted to see him pitch with the Giants just because I like him. I did get to interview him once before he went to the States.
Did he say anything interesting?
Not really, but he, you know, but he did talk and he answered the question. So that's all really you can ask.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah. That's a big deal. You know?
Well, I remember in 2004 trying to pry answers out of him, regarding his future, you know, regarding the merger. He was a key figure in he was the ace pitcher of the Kintetsu Buffaloes, who were going out of business and had publicly said he didn't want to be playing for the Oryx. We didn't have a name for them at that time, the Blue Buffaloes or whatever. I think they were right. Called the Blue Buffaloes. And he basically just pulled out his recorded device and pressed a button and moved his lips as the words came out. I mean,
push button A for response.
it was like, hold on a second. What was the question? Oh yeah. How do you feel about, you know, your future here? Okay. Hold on. Yeah, he just moved his lips.
Sure, didn't pull a string in his back or anything.
It's just the way he was. He was a wonderful pitcher. I certainly remember some really exhilarating duels between him and Daisuke Matsuzaka. And I think it was the 2002 season. Just okay. Remarkable stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So we're going to miss him. And there always are a lot of, at this time of year, and I say this time of year, we really, really are usually done with the season just about at this time of year. But late in the season, there are a lot of retirement announcements, and we had a ceremony tonight with Ryota Igarashi at the Swallows, and that was nice. And but I think we're going to have either not retirement ceremonies, but welcome ceremonies for some other guys, because Hanshin seems like it's going to get rid of a number of guys. A veteran pitcher, Atsushi Nomi, like he's moving on. Kosuke Fukudome, he's going to be moving on. Justin Bohr is out, it seems.
Who knows?
Who knows, right?
Yeah. I think there was, again, a sort of a miscommunication there, because who knows? The Tigers sound like, you know, they were telling people, somebody was telling somebody that he was done. Somebody was saying that they sent him to the farm team after batting practice. You know, it's like after he was preparing for the game and said, oh, sorry, you're deactivated, son. And then the manager the next day comes out and says, oh, no, that was a roster limit size that we realized after practice was over. You know, I know the Hanshin Tigers can be incompetent. I'm not quite certain they're that incompetent.
Yeah, that sounds more Oryx than.
Yeah, not even. Yeah, that's the Terry Collins when he called a guy up for the minors and they sent the wrong guy. And he said, "Get your butt back on the bus. You're not the guy."
But yeah, I thought it was odd, but I see the production Jeffrey Marte has had there in his time, and just really hasn't had any standout production over any long stretches. Not that he has had long stretches to try to produce, but it just seems odd that they would only give Justin Bohr a season and then say, well, you know, we don't really like Jerry Sands.
There could be different reasons for this. And, you know, they could have been having to do with him not being, you know, having a different opportunity somewhere. It could have been a lot of things.
Whatever it is.
You just never know. I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody. you know, based on what it looks like in the media, because it was very vague and fuzzy. But it seems, the biggest thing seems to be that it took a lot of people by surprise. And so the answers, like with the Shun Yamaguchi posting last year, you got the feeling that a lot of people in the Giants, A, didn't know he had a right to ask to be posted, or B, never believed he would actually do it. Because he did it, there were 10 different explanations for what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And I started thinking about Hanchi and Yakult and the Bay Stars. And I think maybe all three of those clubs next year might have a rebuilding situation, because particularly the Tigers, they just have so many older players.
Yeah. They swallowed.
Get rid of a couple. They might as well get rid of them all.
I would not be surprised if Tetsuto Yamada leaves the Swallows as a free agent. And goes to play for like Yomiuri Giants or Hanchin Tigers. You know, he's from Osaka, but he grew up a Tigers fan. He grew up a Giants fan, apparently.
We don't want to see that.
well, you know, he's a human being. He deserves, you know, he's got the right to go where he wants to go.
You know, we don't want to see that, because Hara is going to move him from second base and put him back at second base and move him. And
I think Tatsunori Hara would get a shot in the spring training to calm his second base gene.
I don't know, man. I think we're going to try Yoshikawa at second today. I can see
it. Hey, you like a pitch?
All right. And one other, or a couple other notes. Jose Lopez, the guy I usually refer to as J-Lo on Twitter, he reached 2,000 hits combined in the major leagues and in MPV. And he only needs a handful more hits here in MPV to have 1,000 hits in each league. And that would make him, apparently, to the as far as the report I saw, the first non-Japanese player to have 1,000 hits.
And he did that after spending a couple of seasons with the Giants as basically a bench guy who didn't, you know, as soon as the Giants, Shinosuke Abe said, you know, I could play first base instead of catch. And the Giants said, hey, you, what are you doing at first base? Don't you belong on the bench? You know, and he didn't know. He spent 2 years in sort of limbo with the Giants, or at least 1 year with limbo. I don't remember. But he seems so content and so productive, and more power to him.
Yeah, I just think that there's going to be a major house cleaning at Yokohama.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah, he might not be back next year, but I really enjoyed
watching. I wouldn't be surprised to see him pop up somewhere in Japan if he wants to do it. But on the other hand, it's going to be, I think it was a great place for him to play, especially with a fellow Venezuelan as the manager.
Mm-hmm.
That he was, you know, he was left alone to do his thing, and he's a professional, and he's a lovely guy. So I hope he does get a shot, and I hope it's with a good situation. If not, you know, you did great. More power to you.
And then last note, the Monday evening amateur draft is going to take place. Well, it's taking place on the day that we upload the podcast. I don't know if you're going to be listening to it on that particular day, but it's happening this week. So that should be really fun to watch. I've seen a couple teams already declare who they're going to try and draft, but they may or may not be the only teams who select that particular player.
Yeah, not much drama. I mean, but without the high school tournaments this year and without a lot of amateur tournaments, is a lot less drama. I mean, the public interest is fairly low because there's nobody like, where did that guy from Koshien, where is he going?
Right, which is something I talked about last week, but I wanted to ask you this. Mm-hmm. Do you think because of that, they'll just go with more college players
I would suspect so, because it's always a game. You know, we were having Kozo Ota and I were having this sort of game. It's like, what college produces good pitchers? And because the big name is coming out of Waseda, and I thought, well, okay, who's been a good pitcher out of Waseda in the last 50 years? And I basically, okay, it's Tsuyoshi Wada, Satoru Komiyama, and the Kohei Arihara, who still has a chance to be the next Shugo Fuji if he takes the wrong step.
A couple of steps to the side and one back.
Yeah, yeah. Just a step to the left and do the time warp. But we were going through that and we really couldn't find any, but the big guy, apparently one of the big guys is from Waseda. And I think it's most of the talk is about college pitchers. And the reason for that is obviously if you're not seeing the skills up front and personal, you know, college pitchers, the competition's a little harder. You've had more time to see them. You can see mm-hmm. how their bodies are filling out. I know the Bay Stars said they wanted now help. I don't know what that means in terms of who they're going to pick, but it's going to be an interesting draft, I think, in retrospect. I don't, as much as the anticipation level is very low, but I think you're correct. I think they will go towards more college guys.
Okay. All right. Well, we will get to the questions next week. If you have a question and MP3, I know most of you people, if not all, have a smartphone. So just make a voice memo on your smartphone and then just ship it over to us and send it to yakyujlhn@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at @JBWPodcast with the hashtag #HighHeat. And you can leave comments or questions on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. And, we are getting close to the end here, and we're going to have the Climax Series and then the Japan Series. So looking at a long year, finally coming to an end so we can get some rest.
Indeed.
We do love our baseball, but this has really been a challenging year, and we'll look forward to a really fun Japan Series and playoff and postseason. But until next week, enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at @JBWPodcast and at @JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.